What the fuck are you
doing? You do. I'm so glad I pressed end Collier rather than on the video, because you do not want to see. You do not want to see the video call, mate. Stick to the audio. Stick to the audio. What's happening?
Does that mean you're in the buff, Dave?
No, quite, mate. No, quite. But let's just say I'm just out the shower, shall we say? But I'll leave it at that. I didn't want you to get any unpleasant thoughts. Do you know what I mean?
Even at hanging.
It's quite cold tonight, mate. So I don't know about that.
Foot and shoots from just outside of the box. Pardon me.
Pepsi Max.
It was I. Wooming. Wooming. Dave, I'm at the delirious stage.
Right, here we go. Oh, dearie dear, right? Pull yourself together, man.
And the stadium erupts in red, white, and blue. You've never seen anything like it.
Let's go.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the next episode of the I Ready podcast. As ever, I'm your host Derek, and with me is my co-host Dave. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm freezing, Derek. Absolutely freezing. I think the weather's suddenly changed. Here was me thinking we were going to be getting into springtime, and I'm absolutely Baltic. But just to keep you happy, in about 3 weeks' time, I'll be jetting off to the sunshine, Derek. So just thought that would cheer you up.
I hope it's Pishenden.
That is a terrible thing to say. You can say some nasty, horrible things to me, Derek, but that's the worst. That is definitely the worst.
Yes, don't care what coming between Dave and his holidays. But exactly. Yes, since we were on the airwaves the last time, Dave and I have done the museum tour as well, haven't we?
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it, Derek. I actually think that the time flew past. Going by the time that we were in there, I thought we'd maybe only been in for about 40 minutes. It turns out we were in for over 2 hours in the place. So it was, I was very impressed with it. And apparently, going by a lot of things that people have said, there are so many more exhibits that they change about from time to time because there's so many people have become involved in it. So it's going to be one of the things that we'll be able to go back and there'll be other things to look at as well. But no, I had a fantastic day, Derek. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was the second time, obviously, I've done it. I've done it in December with my dad as well. And there was a couple of things. I don't know if they've added things, but they had certainly changed a couple of the things about. The golden boot for Gaza, as it were, was in a different cabinet as well. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see over the time how it'll evolve. And you never know, we might have a Europa League trophy in there at one point.
No, Derek, I hope. Beyond all hopes, mate, and going by last night's game, it's a wee bit more hopeful than I was before, but we'll get into that once you go down the tunnel and the usual stuff. But it was excellent. Thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'll definitely go back in the near future, I think.
So, Dave, unlike a certain club, we write our own story on this podcast, don't we? So we'll get into it as it were.
Yes, definitely.
Good boy, Dave.
I'm gonna call you good girl.
I should hope not. Only at the weekends.
Exactly, aye. And nights out.
Yes. So on that weird note, we will go down the tunnel and onto the pitch.
No, that's your fault that's turned like that, by the way.
Yes. So the first game we've got to cover was a fantastic game. Saturday the 24th of February, a 5-0 win at home against Hearts in the Premiership. I say a 5-0 win, it was absolute devastation, wasn't it?
It was fantastic. Arguably the performance of the season so far, wasn't it? Everything just clicked in place. And as you're about to get into, Derek, it could have been a hell of a lot more.
Yes. So Well, lined up with four changes from the St Johnstone game we played before that. We lined up Butland, Tavernier, Goldson, Souter, Ridvan, Lundstrom, Diamande, Lawrence, Sterling, Dessers and Cortez. On the subs bench, we have McCrory, Silva, Wright, Roof, Davis, Balogun, Barisic, Raskin and McCausland. And of note, it was Goldson's 300th appearance for the club as well.
Yeah, no, quite incredible. We are going to get in a lot and speak about Goldson later, because there's been a lot of fallout with regards to that. But that's some achievement for him. Fantastic.
Yes. There was also a minute's applause for Ian McMillan. Obviously, as we said in the last podcast, he sadly passed on a few weeks ago. So well observed there by all fans. The first half, though, the kind of domination that we've seen in the 90s, it really was nothing short of an incredible first half from the team, winning every ball, shutting down Hearts at every opportunity, and bar a 5-minute spell, Hearts done absolutely nothing, and even in that spell, we shut them down before they even got a shot off. Ridvan, Lawrence and Lundstrom had been immense in the first half, hadn't they?
Yep, absolutely fantastic. And we keep saying it, Ridvan, especially the sort of past six games, he has been absolutely outstanding and continuing real danger and finally showing the class player that he is. Delighted for him.
Yes. We got off to an amazing start, because on the second minute, Diomande made it 1-0. Very positive start on the whole, with the team fighting for every ball. We win the ball back in the middle of the park, went out wide left to Cortez, who cuts inside, passes to Dio, who collects the ball with his right foot, drops the shoulder, switches to his left foot. He shoots from just outside the box and into the bottom right corner past the keeper. A fantastic goal, Dave.
Again, and it's like instinctive shooting from him, Derek, is which I love. There wasn't this, you know, teeing up the shot. He just instinctively knew where the goal was, took one quick touch and then just hit it as fast as he could. Into bottom corner, fantastic start, great goal as well. Couldn't have asked for anything better.
15th minute, Dessers robs the midfielder of the ball in our half. He drives forward into the Hearts box. He cuts it back and has a shot, making the keeper make a good save. So unlucky that there. That would have been goal of the season.
Yep, excellent pressure by him. And again, just shows you how dominant we were. Hearts just couldn't get out of their own half.
Yep. Just a minute later, Taff had an absolute rasper and it forced a great save from the keeper out for the corner. 18th minute, a long hoofed ball up front. Sterling manages to get in front of the ball, turn the man and has a shot, but a trundler and easy for the keeper. 18th minute, a long shot saved and spilled by the keeper. Dessers headers the ball and another save, and again spilled by the keeper. Dessers tries to get a shot off again, but saved. It was just one of these things with Dessers. It was probably easier to score than miss, but it was offside in any case. So, Dave, you were probably pulling your hair out of that one, weren't you?
I'm saying nothing, Derek. I'm saying nothing.
27th minute, lots of pressure. A great cross from the left by Yilmaz. A header by Dessers at the back post, just wide. He really should have been hitting the target at that point.
Yep.
30th minute, Hearts had a 5-minute spell of possession, and there were pressure on our defence, but our defence dealt with it well. And then on the 36th minute, Cortez made it 2-0. Sterling wins the ball on the right side in midfield. He gets fouled but releases the ball to Lawrence, who gets down the right wing, looks up, crosses in on the deck, went behind Dessers, but right to Cortez, who hits a curling effort into the bottom corner. Brilliant.
It was a fantastic goal, Derek. The build-up play was tremendous. But the finish, first-time shot by Cortez, he really did look really composed throughout this whole game, but that finish especially, absolutely sensational. That's his first goal and an absolute belter at that as well. Tremendous.
Hearts on the 40th minute had a shot high and wide, and then to round out the first half and basically kill the game off, Dessers made it 3-0 on the 44th minute. An absolute stunner. A lovely long cross into the box from Souter from the left. Dessers drifts off his man and on a side foot volley into the net. It does go to a VAR check, but no offside. What a goal, Dave.
Great goal. And again, that is the frustrating thing about him, Derek, because that, the technique, the timing, and the finish by Dessers there, absolutely sensational. But then, you know, he goes and misses the real easy ones that you're expecting him to hit the target with. But take nothing away from him. It was a fantastic goal.
Yes. So into the second half, no changes. And if the third goal never killed it off, then the fourth goal certainly did. Because in the 48th minute, Dessers gets his brace. A stunning delivery from, I think it was Sterling, from the right into the back post. It hits off the thigh of Dessers, who couldn't control it. Lawrence comes into the area, and he gets a touch which hits off the defender. The defender tries to kick it away, but he puts it right into the space of Dessers and he blasts it into the net. There was a long VAR check because there was potential that Dessers had handballed it in the first instance, but it wasn't that in that phase of play either, and it hit off another part of his body, not the certainly his arm anyway, and the goal stood. Brilliant.
Yep, not great pressure play, and as you say, that really did kill the game off at that stage. Great time to score.
Yep. 51st minute, Hearts with a shot wide. 54th minute, Shanklin with a shot on the deck after a good 1-2, but it was slow-paced and easy for Butland. 56th minute, Sterling and Lawrence off, McCausland and Silva on. 58th minute, Tavernier in the box, getting by players, gets to the byline, cross on the deck, and an empty net. Dessers couldn't get there. He only had to stick a leg out. How many times have we seen that from certain players? Only had to stick a leg out, but we just couldn't quite do it there.
He's starting to get a wee bit of a touch of the Kikamar roofs here in Alfredo Morelos, Derek. You know, there's quite often he's scored a brace in matches and we're desperate for him to get the hat trick, but it just doesn't seem to come. It was the same with Alfredo Morelos. How many times did Alfredo score two goals and we were desperate for him to break that to get a hat trick, and it never ever happened? And it seems to unfortunately be happening the same with Dessers as well, because he really, with the amount of chances he had, clear-cut chances, he could have had at least three, if not four, goals in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, it's a striker, though. He's going to get chances, he's going to miss chances. So, you know, when he scores two in the game, you can't really argue, can you?
No, definitely not in this game, that.
However, we did get the fifth goal on the 65th minute. It wasn't Dessers, but it was Silva. Lundstrom was on the left side. He slides the pass into the box to Silva, who gets in front of the defender and shoots into the net from an angle. Another great goal.
Derek, it was a tremendous goal. First of all, the pass, the through ball from Lundstrom to him. He stays onside. And, you know, that's a difficult chance, but he just slots it confidently past the goalkeeper and into the net. It was a great move, a fantastic goal. And at that stage, Derek, we were expecting, you know, six, if not seven goals, because we were just so dominant in the match at that point, weren't we?
Absolutely. 69th minute, Hearts with a flicked header towards goal. Had Butland beat, but it was off the post and then cleared. So, you know, I would say living dangerously, but we're 5-0 up at that point.
Yeah.
70th minute, Diomande and Cortez off, Raskin and Wright on. 76th minute, Hearts with a shot on the left side of the box, right at Butland and an easy take. Dessers finally came off on the 79th minute and Roof came on. 80th minute, Hearts free kick just outside the box on the left, curled over the wall, but relatively simple for Butland. They had another chance on the 83rd minute. It was a weak shot on the deck on the right-hand side of the box, but again, an easy take for Butland. 84th minute, Butland with a great save after a curling effort from the edge of the box. 87th minute, Silva with a turn and shot at an angle on the right side of the box, forces the keeper into a great save, absolutely out of nothing as well. It was a long ball knocked into their box. 92nd minute, Tavernier with a free kick from 25 yards, an easy take for their keeper. And to round out the game, 95th minute, Raskin with a shot from 25 yards as well, but again, right at the keeper. So, Dave, an absolute devastating performance from the team there. You know, it was one of the two banana skins that we thought were going to come up against. Hearts, I think, had been unbeaten since they had won every game since they played us last, where we beat them. They were on form, in-form team, comfortably in third, but we just absolutely breezed by them, and it was outstanding.
It was, like I said, Derek, in my opinion, it was the performance of the season. I would certainly say performance of Philip Clement's tenure so far. This was supposed to be our huge test to play against Hearts. In the last pod, we said the next three games are going to be crucial. If we can get three victories for the next three games, you know, we really thought it was going to go a huge distance, and this was the first test. Hearts had been, was it something like nine games undefeated or something like that Hearts had been, so definitely the sort of next best informed team in Scotland. But we never dreamt it was going to be a scoreline like that. We were ruthless right for the first whistle and got the goals and got everything we deserved in the match. It was a tremendous result.
Yes. So it lined us up for the next banana skin game. It was on Wednesday, the 28th of February. It was away against Kilmarnock in the Premiership. Dave, we still won that game as well.
We did, Derek. And this, after the Hearts game, I was still having butterflies thinking about this match, because this is the game that I honestly thought, and I thought the Hearts game would be tough, but I really did think that this was going to be very difficult, considering we put up a start the last time and Kilmarnock have got a phenomenal record against us in recent years. You know, they've only been beaten a couple of times by us. They've beat us a few times. They've had quite a lot of draws playing. I know the old cliche on that pitch, but it is a huge factor, isn't it? And Kilmarnock are playing very, very well. McInnes has got them playing excellent this season. So we knew that this was going to be a tough one. And it was, Derek. But thankfully, as we're about to get into, we managed to get the 3 points in the end. So a few changes that Clement put out for the starting 11. In goals is Butland, and in the back four of Tavernier, Goldson, Suter and Barisic coming back in, and we'll speak a lot about him during the game, unfortunately. Midfield of Lundstrom, Lawrence, Diomande, and then McCausland, Cortez and Silva. Now again, Desser scored the two goals in the last game. I thought it would be a stick on to play, but no, he does like to, you know, mix up the squad, and it has been successful, Derek, so we didn't question it, and we never would. On the subs bench, McCrory, Ridvan, Dessers, Sterling, Wright, Davies, Balogun, Raskin and McKinnon. So first half, Derek, not much to write home about. To be fair to Kilmarnock, they really took the game to us, and in the first sort of 5 minutes, there was a half chance, the ball down to McCausland on the right wing. He puts a low ball into Silva, he takes a low shot, deflects, and the keeper saves, puts it out for the corner. And from that corner, we really should have scored, because it was in from the right by James Tavernier, and a powerful header by Conor Goldson, palmed away by the Killie goalkeeper and out for another corner. So unlucky there. If it had been just even a couple of centimetres either side of the goalkeeper, I'm sure that would have went in. But no, but
after last night, I'm saying nothing about his headers.
On the 8th minute, a chance at the other end. It was a corner to Killie, and Donnelly, he comes in, nobody marking him, and heads just past the post. So we got away with one there. And then, Derek, a bizarre series of play here from Barisic. I still don't know what he was doing, what he was attempting to do, what his main process was. I honestly don't know. But 9th minute, the ball gets played down the right wing, and Barisic is chasing the ball back to defend along with Armstrong, and he was winning the race against Armstrong. The two of them get down near the byline, and Barisic is going to be first to the ball, but he kind of runs in front of him, falls down as if he'd been clipped. And if he had been clipped, Derek, it was the tiniest of touches. I still didn't really see anything. People are saying that they did see a touch. I am struggling to see it. He goes down as if he's been shot by a sniper, let's be honest. Grabs the ball, and the referee rightly rewards a free kick to Kilmarnock for the handball for him grabbing the ball. Now, Derek, did you see anything in that at all, in that bit of play there by Barisic?
In my notes, I've got Killie get a free kick after Bornut was a shitebag.
I honestly don't know what he was doing, because I could see quite clearly he was going to be first to the ball, so he could have just cleared it or whatever. I don't know what was going through his head, but that free kick unfortunately led to Kilmarnock getting their first goal, because the ball was played in to the box. Lundstrom jumps up, the ball comes off his arm. Now, Lundstrom can't do anything, his back's turned, he's not making himself bigger, he didn't raise his hand. So the ball hits his arm as he's got it down by his side, it hits his arm, and once the ball bounces off his arm, he puts his hand up. So he didn't put his hand up and the ball hit his arm, he put his hand up after the ball had struck his arm, which was at his side, which he couldn't move out the road. But of course, with these new rules that nobody seems to know anything about, the referee goes and he awards a penalty to Kilmarnock straight away. What's that all about? Now, I had it in my head that any of these decisions, the ref, you know, there would have to be a VAR check, but the referee awards the penalty instantly. And of course, Kilmarnock on the 11th minute step up and score from the penalty spot. So, Derek, from the bizarre events from Borna Barisic to the free kick in to the bizarre penalty award to no VAR, surely you've got some thoughts on that.
I mean, Borna was getting a hard time for what he'd done, and quite rightly so. It was absolutely ridiculous. It's not the first time he's been caught out being a shitebag, and there's been accusations of maybe not as blatant as that before, but feigning injury at times as well. So quite rightly, he's getting criticism for that, but he's not ultimately the reason why we lost the goal, because we still need to defend the free kick ultimately. But the actual decision from the referee was another bizarre one. Again, we'll get into it after last night's game as well. I don't know what the referee was thinking, because Lundstrom has jumped up, he's turned to his kind of, as he's been jumping, he's turned to the side, the arm's been slightly raised, and it's hit off the kind of underside of his arm, but within the silhouette of his body. So if you think of where the ball has hit his arm, had his arm not been there, and it was in his silhouette of his body, it was going to hit his body anyway. So it never changed the direction of the ball at all. So, Dave, it's baffling. I don't know what the handball rule is now, and we'll get into it, as I said, about last night's game. Referees are just making it up as they go along, because I don't think there is a clear guidance there from IFAB when it comes to the handball rule. I think they've tried to clarify it, but they've just made it more complicated. Nobody knows anymore.
And no VAR check or him going to have another look at it, Derek?
Well, here's the thing about that. I think there was a VAR check. It's just the communication between the referee and the fans in the stadium, and or what's been seen on the TV, is non-existent. There is no communication to say. And I was having a discussion with a Celtic fan, funnily enough, about this today at work, and it doesn't take the brains of Britain just to go with what they've done at the Women's World Cup last year and actually allow the referee to make announcements over the tannoy within the stadium to say, this is what's happening, and you get instant updates about that. It's a no-brainer. It should be happening, but there's no communication between the referee, the linesman, the VAR team, or whatever, and about what's happening. So I don't know.
I found it very strange that you're saying that there was a VAR check, but there was nothing said by any of the commentators on the TV at all that you know there'd been anything. It was just as if he'd awarded the penalty. The penalty was taking the score. There was no pause, no hesitation, nothing. Didn't he go to the referee as if he was listening to anyone in his headset, anything at all? I just found it very, very bizarre. But
you made the point about the TV there. I don't know if this was on TV, because I watched the games on RTV. Tom Miller's useless when it comes to things like this. So
I'll cut him a wee bit of slack, because he's usually got folk in with him who are quite knowledgeable also. But there didn't seem to be anything said at all about it. But like I said, Kilmarnock on the 11th minute, they stepped up and they scored from the penalty spot, putting them 1-0 up. So Rangers with a bit of an uphill battle here. The 18th minute, Cortez with a long-range curling shot and a diving save by the Killie goalkeeper out for the corner. That was a fantastic strike by him. From that corner, it was played in, and there's Connor Goldson again with the free header over the bar. Like you said, Derek, we're getting into last night's game, but, you know, that's quite frustrating. A lot of clear-cut chances for Goldson, but not able to get them, you know, score from them. So on to the 25th minute, Rangers not really finding any rhythm in Barisic. Then he gets booked for a foul on Armstrong, so Barisic really not having a great game. 35th minute, Rangers starting to get a wee bit more of the ball in sort of last 10 minutes, but nothing really happening in the final third. 42nd minute, a free kick into the Killie box, a header out to Dio Mandy. He hits a snapshot but wide of the post. 44th minute, and Goldson again, he gets yellow carded for remonstrating with the referee there. And that takes us into half time, Derek. So poor first half from Rangers, no real fluidity there. Midfield are very static and nothing at any real note up front. So I think we all knew at that point, Derek, that changes were needed for the second half. And going into the second half, the changes were needed, because everyone, and myself included, knew that Barisic was having an absolute nightmare of a match. He didn't play well at all. He came off, Silva came off, who had a very quiet game, and Dessers and Rudvan came on, and that certainly got the team playing much better at that stage, Derek. So into the 46th minute, though, and Kilmarnock really could have put us under even more pressure, because they had a fantastic chance to score. And if it wasn't for the heroics of Jack Butland from Kennedy of Kilmarnock, he pulled off an absolutely magnificent save to keep it at 1-0 to Kilmarnock. Absolutely tremendous stop, Derek.
Aye, what a save. I mean, the man's worth his weight in gold. And the problem, though, is the actual play that led up to it, it all started from, you know, a quick free kick played up the park through our sleeping defence. We're 1-0 down.
Yeah.
We're fighting for the title here. And you've just got a defence that's sleeping once again. It was poor.
Yep. 53rd minute, though, and this is when I started to see that we, you know, were starting to get back into the game, and especially Tom Lawrence, because he runs at the defence and he's about to let fly and he's pushed over right at the edge of the box. And that we knew was going to be in James Tavernier territory. And it certainly was, because a minute later, James Tavernier steps up and hits one of the most unstoppable free kicks that you'll see. You know, I was going to say James Tavernier-esque, because it was absolutely sensational. The goalkeeper got a hand to it, but he hit it with such power and accuracy. There's nothing that the goalkeeper could have done that, and that made it 1-1. Absolutely tremendous goal.
He only scores penalties, apparently.
Straight after that, though, McCausland was off and Sterling came on, another sub there, and then we only had to wait 4 minutes for Rangers to take the lead for the first time in the game. And it was Lawrence, a ball into Cortez, into the box. He gets the ball to Dessers. He just can't seem to get the ball out of his feet to have a shot. The Killie defender, he hits a sort of half-arsed clearance only as far as Lawrence inside the box, and he just fires a low shot past the goalkeeper into the back of the net. Fantastic stuff. In the space of 4 minutes, we've gone from 1-0 down to winning 2-1. Sensational stuff.
I mean, it all started from, I mean, bearing in mind, we got the free kick for Tavernier, but because of Lawrence's great play.
Yeah.
And this all started because it was a quick break up the park and Lawrence was fouled and he had the vision to take a quick free kick as well. And he eventually got the ball back, obviously, and then scored a screamer. But, you know, the guy was brilliant in the second half.
Superb, yep. 66 minutes, really should have been three. Corner in for James Tavernier. Dessers, he runs to the front post, hooks a shot. I thought it was going to go well over the bar. Next minute, it comes crashing off the underside of the bar and down and away for Kilmarnock. Really unlucky there. Good instinctive play by Dessers. 70th minute, this is when the subs were coming on. Now, unfortunately for us, and as we're about to find out, 70th minute, Cortez, who had been playing well in the last few games, he had an obvious injury. He was holding on to the back of his thigh, hobbling off. So he comes off as a sub. Wright comes on. And in the 73rd minute, Lawrence comes off after having a great game, and Nico Raskin goes on. 78th minute, Dessers, he holds up the ball on the right into Raskin. He puts the ball back to Dio Mandy. He hits a shot, but just wide. Really unlucky. That had been a great goal. And then another bit of controversy here, Derek, which I still can't believe. One of two, I would like to say. Dessers, he picks up a slack back pass. He runs into the box. He tries to beat his man. He tries to turn him. Now, the ball sort of deflects off the Kilmarnock player, bounces up, clearly strikes him in the hand. Like, clearly, as clear as day, his hand's out, ball hits it, no VAR, ball cleared, nothing happens. Or again, I'm saying no VAR, nothing to say that there was a VAR check. Referee didn't give anything, didn't look as if it was reviewed. It was as clear a handball as you'll see inside the box, and we were denied a stonewall penalty.
I just don't get it, Dave. I really don't. I mean, if you're given a penalty for the Lundstrom one, why not this one? But I think we're going to come up against one in a couple of minutes that was even worse than this.
Yeah, so that was the first one. So it gets into the 90th minute. There's 6 minutes of additional time played. On the 91st minute, another clear stonewall penalty for me, which we didn't get, and it was Scott Wright into the box. He sees Dessers free round about the penalty area. He cuts the ball back. It clearly hits off the Kilmarnock defender's hand again. VAR check this time, because it was clear, but still no penalty awarded. It's clear as day again. as clear as the first one, I would say, and I don't have any reason to see how the referee could not give that again as a clear handball, because the ball was cut back, his hand was out, it hit his hand, it changed the movement of the ball, as clear as you like, and we still didn't get a penalty for it. Quite incredible again, and very annoying that this incident wasn't shown on any of the highlights that we look back, either on Sky or Sports Scene, because that was another clear penalty that we were denied, Derek.
I mean, Dave, it's even worse this time with the fact that, I mean, granted, there was one camera angle where it was a wee bit unsure, but there was one, another camera angle, it was clear as day, it was hit off his hand. So it was outstretched, there was a clear spin and a clear change of direction of the ball as well. It went to VAR and they still couldn't give a penalty. I mean, where... I'm at a loss, Dave.
Yeah, it really is. I was absolutely fuming. And like I said, I was more annoyed about that one as I was the first one, which we both agreed was a stonewall as well. But the fact that that's not been covered on any of the highlight programmes either is baffling. And we keep getting told that there's an agenda here, but surely that would have showed again that we should have had another stonewaller. Didn't happen. Absolutely shocking. Raging about that, and it meant that Kilmarnock still had an opportunity to try and get a goal and get a draw out of this game, because there was still about 3 minutes left on the clock after that happened. And Killie were mounting. They had about four corners in a row in the last sort of 3 minutes of injury time. Thankfully, Rangers defended very well, managed to get it clear, and the referee blew full time. So, like I said at the time, I was relieved. I thought that was an absolute massive result for us. It should have been a lot more. The two penalties, like we've just said, shocking that we never got them. But from a poor first half performance to come out and get that, two quick fire goals, the pressure was on us, but it just, I said it the last time, it just shows the determination and the grit that Philip Clement has installed in the team, because that's a fantastic result for us.
Yeah, I mean, it was all about the determination to win and get through that game. And it was a massive banana skin potentially, and we knew it was going to be difficult. I think there was stats that did you show me beforehand, I think it was, and I think out of the last 20, we'd only won something like, what was it, four or five of them or something, against Kilmarnock, which is mental when you think about it. So, just fantastic from the team there. I mean, we've no right to win this title this year. We've no right to be even in with a shout of winning it, given the fact that we're so far behind with changed managers. But this is when I've believed this game, that we can go on and win it. Granted, it's near the end of the season, but I do believe we can go on and win it now because of that. However, Dave. However. We always knew that we were going to drop points in this run-in. Celtic were going to drop points. We were going to drop points. These are the two games I thought it was going to be. I don't think anybody thought it was going to be at home against Motherwell.
I know. Yep. And it's, again, and we should know, Derek, because history has shown us, even during Walter Smith's first tenure, Dick Advocaat as well, when Rangers were flying, the big games that we think were going to be under the cosh that we end up winning, it's usually the games at Ibrox against other teams that we think we should be able to dispose of very easily. It's usually these games that come back to bite us in the bum, and this one certainly did.
Yes. Saturday the 2nd of March, we lost 2-1 at home against Motherwell in the Premiership. We lined up with four changes from the Killie game. We lined up Butland, Tavernier, Goldson, Suter, Ridvan, Lundstrom, Diamande, Raskin, Sterling, McCausland and Dessers. On the subs bench, we have McCrory, Silva, Jack, Lawrence, Wright, Roof, Davis, Balogun and Barisic. Not a great first half from our perspective. We allowed Motherwell to start well with lots of space. They were chasing everything and pressing us high, and they got their reward on the 9th minute. From there, we had a bulk of the possession and play, but there was so much wasteful balls into the box, wasteful shots. Motherwell were sitting back and defending well, allowing us to have possession, and were forcing us into slow, meandering play rather than the quick, direct play we've been known for during the Clement era. We did have chances and we were shooting. Some were half chances, others were decent chances hit right at the keeper though. The goal itself for Motherwell was on the 9th minute, as I said. It was a quick free kick from the Motherwell half, floated down the right side. Suter comes across and goes down easy. and gets none of the ball or the player. The cross comes in, the attacker gets in front of Goldson, and a one-touch shot into the net. So easy, shit defending once again, and all stemmed from a long ball over the top of our defence. I mean, shit from Suter for being out of position in first place, to not even having the gumption to take the man out and just taking a yellow card for it, and then for the player to ghost away from Goldson. Not the first time we're talking about Goldson in these games, is it?
No, it's not. And dare I say it as well, Derek, and I think the man's an absolute superstar. I think Jack Butland could have done a wee bit better as well. So collectively, a bit of a shit show from our defence, as you quite rightly said. Shocking from Suter. Goldson just completely loses his man. And by what I saw of the goal, very close to Butland and going in. And, you know, considering some of the other saves that we've seen him pull off recently, would maybe expect him to do a wee bit better there as well. So, no, it was very, very poor defending all round.
Yeah. As I said, from there, we probably got more of the possession and we had a few chances. 18th minute, was a good cross from the left from Ridvan to the right to Dessers, who heads it wide. 19th minute, Diamande robs the defender of the ball near the Motherwell box, has a shot, forces the keeper into a decent save and out for the corner. 23rd minute, Ridvan gets the ball on the left, cuts inside, looking for a pass. He ends up having a shot. There was action on the ball, possible a couple of deflections and a great save from the keeper. 23rd minute, Ridvan has a great pass up to the box for Diamande, who was falling, tries a backheel flick, and it was saved by the keeper. Quite inventive, that one there. 27th minute, long cross into the back post from Tavernier to McCausland, who cuts it back in, has a shot, but it was blocked. Back to him, has another shot, again blocked. Falls to Dessers, who has a shot on the spin and blocked and out for the corner there. And then in the 30th minute, controversy, because an absolute a shocker of a follow-through challenge on McCausland, and he ended up having to go off injured, and he's not been right since either as well. Dave, it was a borderline red, but yep. Did we get that? No. Did we get a yellow card? No. Dave, no. We never even got a foul for it.
It was an absolute shocking challenge, Derek. I think you're maybe underplaying it slightly. I would have said he was endangering the player. It did look late to me as well. So as far as I see it, it was a red card all day long. But the fact you said that there wasn't even a foul given, never mind a yellow card, is absolutely scandalous. And it put McCausland out of the game as well. So I don't know what's going on. That's three incredible decisions that we've been speaking about in the last two games that have went against us. And the amount of moaning and bleating that's been going on for the other side of the City fans with decisions with them, there's three absolute shockers that we've had against us there. And that was just a terrible decision, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm basing it on when you look at Sterling's red card a few games ago, and I know I keep banging on about this, but if that then is deemed a red card challenge, then that has to be the baseline of all red card challenges.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it went to an appeal and they still never rescinded the red card and demoted it to a yellow, I wouldn't have been too angry if a yellow card was given for that challenge on McCausland there. But the fact that there was nothing, not even a foul given, is a complete dereliction of duty from the referee and obviously the VAR team as well. The official's first and foremost obligation when they're refereeing a game is to protect the players, make sure they're safe. That clearly would never done that there. And for the fact that that went unpunished is nothing short of shocking. But that's what we have come up against these days.
Yep. And we will speak about the player that committed the foul later on when you get into Motherwell's second goal.
Yes. McCausland came off in the 34th minute. It was a long period of time there. You had to get treatment, and he came off and Silva came on for him. 35th minute, the ball was going through to our goal. Butland comes charging out. Suter nicks the ball off him. Absolutely no communication. Once again, Suter making mistakes at the back.
Yeah.
37th minute, it was a long ball up into the box by Goldson. Silva with a side foot volley from close range and right at the keeper. 42nd minute, Ridvan with a shot from distance, took a wee deflection but right at the keeper. And then to round out the half, 44th minute, Dessers with a great cross into the middle from the right. Tavernier with a bullet header going goal bound, but it was deflected off the head of the defender and out for the corner. So plenty of chances, but just wasteful with them.
Yeah. I was still feeling hopeful, Derek, because we were creating a lot of chances there, and I just thought it's going to be one of those games. But surely a couple of them are going to fall into place and we're going to get a few goals for it. So even though we weren't playing at our best, we were still creating a lot of chances. But defensively wise, we just looked as if there was no concentration there at all, which is worrying also.
Yes. So into the second half, Raskin came off at half time and Lawrence came on. Raskin was having another shocker of a game. I don't know if he's still carrying an injury or there's a confidence issue there, but he's not the same player this season as he was when we'd seen him last year, was he?
No, and I think it's possibly a touch of both, Derek. I don't think he's 100%. And obviously when he's been out for that long, and he's looking at the midfield as well, who are playing very well. And obviously Dio Mandy's came in there and hit the ground running from, you know, right from the start. He realises he's got a tough job on his hand to get back into the team. But we'd be expecting a player of his class to be able to have the mentality to do that. So I don't think he's 100% as yet. So I'll lay off him just now, but no, it wasn't worrying. It was a pretty poor show from him in the first half.
Yes. 47th minute, Motherwell with a shot well over the bar. 48th minute, Dessers actually had the ball in the back of the net from a corner that wasn't cleared. The ball was flicked up by the defender, goes goal bound, flicked up again, and Dessers rolled it into the net, and it was flagged for offside. At the time, I'm not sure how. I've not seen a replay back of it. VAR was apparently checked. RTV, once again, though, absolutely shit for replays. It just doesn't give replays up to date. And commentator, I know they're Rangers fans, so there'll be a bit of blue-tinted specs there, but they just take it far too far sometimes. 54th minute, Motherwell with the ball. We were standing off them. The ball was rolled into our box. It was flicked up and Butland tips it onto the bar. We break quickly. One of our players was clearly taken out with no attempt to play the ball, no foul given. Motherwell quickly break back from that, nearly go 1v1 with our defence, but our defence stands up to it and it was a weak shot. I mean, what the fuck is the referee playing at this point? We got clearly wiped out and Motherwell had a bloody chance from that. What's the issue, referee?
Yep, exactly, yep.
55th minute, Silva caught in the box by the sliding in defender. Studs were up. Silva even gets to the ball first. There was a long, long, long VAR check. The referee ends up going to the screen, sees it for a good minute, several different angles, and eventually the penalty was given. I don't know again what the referee and VAR were looking at there, because it was clear as day. Silva knocked the ball round the defender. He came in with his studs up. It was again a borderline red card challenge as well.
Yep, 100%. And, you know, we're looking at the game, and you've just said it, Derek. Obviously, we are Rangers supporters and we're looking at it, but it's not just the fact that we're biased against their team. These are clear and obvious fouls that are happening, and, you know, some of them serious fouls that are going completely unpunished. It's absolutely incredible.
I mean, I'll go back to the St. Johnson game a few games ago where it was as clear as day. One of our players got taken out in the box. Should have been a penalty straight away and then let VAR check it. But the referee looked at linesman. The linesman looked at the referee and then they conferred with VAR and it taken 5 minutes to sort out. It was diabolical from referees. Yep. Anyway, up steps Tavernier on the 60th minute, high at the left. The keeper dives the wrong way. Goal. We thought the comeback was on, Dave, just like Kilmarnock.
We did, and as you say, we weren't playing particularly well. We knew it was still going to be tough, but I was hoping the fact that Motherwell had held out, they were winning, I thought that was going to knock the stuffing out of them, us getting back into the game, and I thoroughly expected us to go on and get the winner, Derek.
Yeah, never happened that way though, because on the 61st minute, Silva with a shot from distance well over. 65th minute was a quick break from Motherwell, ending in a shot right at Butland. 65th minute, Lundstrom gets the ball, drives it forward, slides to the right to Sterling, who shanks it wide. 67th minute, a long ball into the left post. Silva knocks it back to the middle, but nobody there. Defender heads it out for the corner, and it nearly sneaks into the Motherwell net. Motherwell starting to get dangerous at this point then, and had a good chance, a near 1v1, but a last-ditch tackle puts it in the shot out for the corner. And from ultimately that corner, on the 75th minute, Motherwell get a goal and make it 2-1. The corner wasn't effectively cleared out to the right side. A long ball into the back post. Tavernier tries to jump, but nowhere near it. And a header right at the back post past Butland. Dave, you mentioned, you hinted at it earlier, the irony of the whole situation is it's the same player that shouldn't even be on the park who absolutely done McCausland. What can you say, Dave?
you can't say anything, Derek, because it was a shocking decision. If he'd have been sent off at the time, which he should have been, he wouldn't have scored that second goal. It's quite simple. The whole game would have been completely different. And Rangers would have more likely have went out and got the 3 points from it, from that absolutely shocking decision. Again, though, getting into the goal, Derek, defence caught napping once more. Quite a simple goal in the end at the back post, and really just poor defending all round from us there again. And I think we were just taking Motherwell far too lightly in this game, and it just seems as if the concentration had gone in defence altogether. The stretch and run that we've been on, the defence has been playing well and they have been switched on for the vast majority of the games, but this game as a whole, the whole defence just looked absolutely shocking.
It's just that the whole team had a collective failure in this game, which, you know, you can get one or two players going off, but this seemed to be going back to the Beale days of just collectively switching off. 76th minute though, Dessers came off and Roof came on. 89th minute, Lundstrom with a shot just outside of the box and a fantastic save. Rebounds out to Ridvan, who shoots, and another fantastic save out for the corner. 90th minute, a superb cross from Ridvan on the left. Goldson with a biscuit to Inheed, and he went well wide. 90th minute, Sterling off right on. In the 91st minute, Roof with a shot blocked by the keeper out to Tavernier, who floats into the back post and have a header cleared off the line out for the corner. I didn't note it in my notes here because I missed it at the game, but I've since seen stills as well. When Roof came on, he tried to get the ball in the box and he was clearly getting held by about two different Motherwell players. Mm-hmm. Clearly impeded, should have been a penalty again. So once again, referee and VAR not doing their job properly.
100%. And you could see quite clearly that they were grabbing onto his shirt as well, Derek. You could see the shirt being pulled. It's clear cut. I'm glad that you mentioned that because it's something that I did have down in my notes. But it is clear a penalty again, as we can see, but absolutely nothing from it.
No. So a real, real disappointing result. As I said, it's not the result we thought we'd have dropped points on, especially at home. Obviously, we take it on the chin, but we've got to at least express the whole refereeing issues, and I think Clement did kind of think that out as well in a constructive way in the press conference. However, we kind of got away with one, Dave, because...
No, we did. Majorly, Derek. We majorly got away. kind of here at all. We majorly got away with it because...
Celtic lost 2-0 to Hearts the very next day. So, you know, it's the first time this season, and it's the first time in a long time, Celtic could have actually turned the tables on us. The pressure was on them, and they failed to do so. There was obviously issues in that game, which we'll get into as well.
Oh, but... surely I've not heard anything that happened in that game, Derek.
But it was a major telling point, and I think there was two ways of looking at it, and it's like, well, we could have... taking advantage of them losing, you know, well, and we could have went 5 points clear, but I think when you slip up, you've got to hope your rivals slip up as well, and they did do that. And you've got to maybe think, did Celtic slip up because there was a bit of psychology at play there, the fact that the pressure was on them to go back ahead and go top the league again, and the pressure got to them. So you don't know if that result would have happened if we had won the game anyway against Motherwell. So get out of jail free card. We got away with one, but that's how leagues are won sometimes.
It is, and I am hoping, and I think I will be right in this. Philip Clement will have this now installed in the team, that concentration has to be 100% at all times, and we cannot take any team lightly, because I think a lot had been made of the previous few matches against Aberdeen, against Hearts and against Kilmarnock, you know, that they won those three. And certainly I said it, Derek, I was exactly the same, that was going to be absolutely massive for us if we could get three wins there. And maybe that crept into the players' thoughts as well, that they thought that they had done the hard work and got the three, and that the next game was going to be a given, that we were going to win it. I hope that's not the case, but I get the feeling that it is. And, you know, I think that Clement will have it instilled now that we can't be like that again. We can't be complacent in any match that we play. So here's hoping that they take a lesson from that. But going back to Celtic, they had the chance there. It didn't happen. That could be majorly telling for them. I hope it is. But psychologically, I think that could be huge. So fingers crossed. But we definitely got away with one there, Derek.
So it leads us into the last game, which was last night or two nights ago when you were listening to this. Thursday, the 7th of March, it was a 2-2 draw away to Benfica in the Europa League last 16 at leg one. Dave, a fantastic performance, a fantastic result.
Incredible. Going by the injuries, and, you know, we glossed over it in the Kilmarnock game, Derek, the injuries are piling up, and unfortunately for Cortez, it looks as if he's going to be out now for the rest of the season, just as he was starting to come good and look like a quality sign. It's a huge blow. We are seriously lacking wide players at the moment, aren't we? With Sima still being out, with Matondo being out, with Cortez being out, we are running short. And as you're about to get into, the team that Clement put out for this game was telling of that. But I'll let you get into it, Derek.
Yes, two changes from the Motherwell game. Clement did come out before the game and say, I mean, we've got five wingers in the team and four of them are out injured long term, and we've got one sitting that has to play on the bench because he was injured in the last game. So we lined up Butland, Tavernier, Goldson, Suter, Ridvan, Lundstrom, Diomande, Lawrence, Sterling, Silva and Dessers. On the subs bench, we had McCrory, Kay Wright, Jack, Roof, Davis, Barisic, King, Raskin, McCausland, Yefeko, Fraser and McKinnon. So, first half, despite largely being on the back foot and not offering much up front apart from the goals, an impressive and assured first half. We rode our luck on occasion. We asked big saves of Butland, which he duly given us, and we defended very, very well. The players looked hungry. They were being physical, which was really, really good to see, wasn't it?
It was. It was excellent. Right from the start, Derek, we were not fancied to get anything from this game going in at that stadium, playing against a team with vast expenses, much more than what we have, the amount that they've spent on players compared to us. Some superstars in there, Angel Di Maria, Otamendi, the young guy Garcia that came through their youth academy, who was sensational all game. The absolute class act of a team, and the performance that we put on, Derek, was absolutely tremendous. Sensational stuff.
Yes. We were up against it straight away, though, because in the fourth minute, Butland with a big save after a lot of pressure and a shot at pace. We weathered the early pressure, though, and a lot of corners. And unbelievably, we went 1-0 up on the seventh minute with Lawrence scoring. I actually think it was our first chance up front as well.
Yeah, it was, yep.
We went down the left with Silva, cuts it to Diomande on the overlap, who gets to the touchline, a lovely cross into the middle, and a stunning header into the net by Lawrence. Brilliant.
Great play, great move all round. The final ball by Diomande, tremendous. We've never seen him in that position before. He's usually, you know, when we're attacking in or around the edge of the box, but for him to do, as you say, the overlap and run, nobody able to follow him. A phenomenal ball, and the timing of the header by Lawrence just to run in there. Didn't even have to jump in the air. It was right in front of him. It was played so perfectly and battered it into the back of the net. Absolute dreamland, Derek. Fantastic goal.
Yes. 10th minute, Lawrence receives the ball on the left near the box, turns in a quick shot and a decent save from the keeper. 14th minute, a break from Benfica, slides the ball to the left of our box, past Tavernier. A shot from the attacker and a great save from Butland. Rebounds back out to the attacker in the middle, who has a shot. It was blocked by the defender, and then the ball weirdly seems to stop dead in midair, and Butland ends up gathering the ball on the ground as well. So from there, Benfica had a number of chances going either wide or just fizzling out. They're really getting frustrated at this point. Benfica, on the 38th minute, work the ball into our box. They slide the ball into space for the attacker, who gets a shot off on the turn. Easy for Butland, as it was right at him. Goal Robertson in that process slides in, and it was Di Maria rolls about like he was chopped down by Goldson. Yep. It was a quick VAR check, but play went on because there was absolutely nothing in it at all. In this, you could see the crowd were starting to get on Benfica's back, and I think that fed into their players as well. So this is when they started to play all their antics as well, like rolling about. And fair play to the referee in this game, because he was having absolutely none of it. 40th minute, Sterling robs the defender of the ball near their box on the right side at the touchline, drives it into the box, a small tug, and he falls down. There was claims for a penalty, but there was nothing much in it, so correct decision not to give it. 42nd minute, was a corner in from Benfica on the right. Suter headed it onto his arm. It went goalbound, and a great save from Butland out and eventually cleared. 43rd minute, another big save from Butland with his foot this time after the ball was crossed in from the right to the left, turns and shoots. And then on the 45th minute, the referee stops the game because there was a long VAR check for the incident that happened about 3 minutes beforehand, yeah, which was a Suter arm ball. The referee then goes to the screen. You knew what was coming, and a penalty was given. Dave, I've seen this back multiple times. I've seen numerous takes on it. Dave, by the letter of the law, that is not a penalty. He's headed it onto his own arm.
Yep, definitely. And as I've told you before, Derek, my son, in his final year at school, was able to do a refereeing course. So he had to study all the IFAB stuff. We sat for hours going through questions on the website. And I got him, he was working, he didn't get to see it. And I got him to look back at the decision. And he's completely gobsmacked as to why that was given as a penalty. Because quite clearly, he heads the ball. First of all, it comes off his arm and then it gets cleared. But the fact, Derek, that the play went on for so long after it, as you say, it was like 2 minutes after the incident, it gets called back to VAR after that. So absolutely incredible. And again, it's shown it's not just our referees in Scotland that don't seem to know what the handball rule is. It looks as if it's throughout Europe as well. Absolutely baffling.
So, I mean, there's the issue as well. That's one issue with it. It goes against the rules because it's came off his head. He's headed the ball and it's came off his own arm. So that's the rules. It shouldn't have been given as a penalty. The next thing is the VAR check. How many angles was seen? Because one angle, certainly, it looks as if it maybe skiffed his head, maybe never had much of movement. But another angle shows it clearly getting headed by Suter and clearly changing the direction of the ball onto his arm. Mm-hmm. So how many angles are they actually they seeing when they do VAR checks? I think we've been victim of this before, where it's only either shown a still or one angle. Somebody said tonight, it might on Twitter, it depends on what the referee asks for. Well, that's not the point, because the referee should need to see every angle, because that's the whole point of VAR, to get as many angles and many views at it as you can. The next thing here as well, it forced Butland into a great save. What would have been the decision, and I don't know this, what would have been the decision if Butland never saved that and it went into the back of the net?
Yeah, exactly.
And once again as well, kind of going like what I was talking about changing the direction of the ball, that clearly changed the direction of the ball in this case. The ball was going out for a corner. If he headed it, if it never hit his arm, it would have went out for a corner. So do you think he's actually trying to header it into his own net? No, he isn't. So it had a massive impact. That hand, as he was jumping, which again, where's he meant to put his hand as he's jumping up? And also as well, his arm was kind of half resting. I know it wasn't his fault in this one. It was just a view of circumstance. But the arm was actually on the shoulder of the Benfica player. So it was almost artificially getting put up further as well. Dave, if this is now international referees not knowing the rules, then what chance have we got? Does it not tell IFAB and the lawmakers that this rule needs scrapped?
Definitely, 100%. Not even scrapped, Derek. It needs reviewed. It needs there's something needs to happen, because that is, you know, I don't know how many times we've mentioned that referees clearly don't know what the rule is. We are getting conflicting information as to what the rule should be and what the definitions are and what the referees are saying. Even with VAR, Derek, as you quite rightly said there, I had no idea until you just mentioned it, that somebody said that a referee asks to see what angle, you know, that they're looking at the back. Surely they should be shown it in all angles just to get 100% what's happening. I think it's quite incredible. There's loads of ways around this that it could happen, you know, to make things better, but getting the referee to then come over and, you know, make the final decision on a screen. There should be a few people that are looking at that and all coming to the same conclusion as to what's happening, and it's not. And the referees just, again, look completely baffled as to what the actual rules are. And what more can we say? But again, another huge decision that goes against us that shouldn't have. And that's about five that we've mentioned now just in the last three games.
Yeah, just baffling. Anyway, penalty was taken, one each. It was a slow penalty down the middle. Butland dives one way and it went down the middle. So that was it. So given the fact that it was a long VAR check as well, we're into injury time. 5 minutes was given. We're kind of taking the stuffing out of us. But no, it certainly never, because on the 49th minute, Sterling made it 2-1. It was a long ball into the Benfica box. Their keeper comes out, completely wipes out Goldson. It wasn't cleared by the defender. It was out to Silva, who puts a cross in. It was dummied by, I think it was Tavernier. Sterling comes charging right through the middle of the defence, and I want to say taps it in, but I don't think he did. He kind of blasts it in into the back of the net. There was a VAR check for the offside for the player who dummied it, but he wasn't interfering with play at all, and I don't think he even touched it. So the goal stood. Absolutely brilliant response just before halftime.
Incredible. I mean, I think we were all still absolutely raging through the penalty that was given against us. And then for that to happen, it was more disbelief than anything else, but fantastic. And for Sterling to get his first senior goal away against Benfica in the Europa League, that's a special moment for him, Derek. And thoroughly deserved, I have to say, because the guy had an absolutely fantastic game. For a guy who's a right back to come in and play numerous positions for us and to find himself playing as a winger and not look out of place, charge it. I thought he was excellent in the first half, Derek. He was arguably one, you know, our best player in the first half, apart from Butland. I thought he was sensational and well deserved for that goal. Delighted for him, and for us to go in 2-1 at half time is tremendous stuff. I keep saying it, stuff, you know, dreamland at that moment. Fantastic.
He's the new Papach, isn't he?
I think he is, mate. I think he is.
Yeah, so into half-time, absolutely elated at that as well. So, no changes at half-time, which I thought was interesting, given the fact that we had put so much effort. We were under the cosh for a lot of that half as well. But in the 50th minute, Tavernier lays it off to Diamande on the bounce, who turns and shoots, a decent effort, but right at the keeper. 56th minute, a corner in from the left from Benfica to the middle at the edge of the box, takes it to the right, has a shot come cross, it kind of flashed across our goal and out for the goal kick. 61st minute, launch to Silva on the edge of the box, Silva drives it to the left and has a shot, forcing the save from the keeper and out for the corner. That was one of the few chances we had, decent chances we had. Benfica were putting a hell of a lot of pressure on us, constant possession. We just could not retain possession in midfield especially, and that was the worrying thing. We were looking very, very leggy, kind of round about the 55th minute into the 67th minute, and none more so than Benfica pulled it back to two each on the 67th minute, with Conor Goldson scoring another great OG in the Europa League.
Against Benfica, he did the last time as well, yeah.
I mean, we're talking about the header that he had a couple of games ago. I mean, this was a fantastic header. Just the wrong goal, Conor, once again. I mean, he was caught in two minds. Once again, making a lapse in judgment. It was a great delivery. We can't take it away. It was a difficult ball to deal with, but when you're playing at this level, you cannot have lapses in concentration. Conor Goldson got a lot of criticism for that last night. And Dave, I kid you not, it must have been only about 5 minutes before that I'd sent you a message just to say, as much as I criticised them in the past, Tavernier and Goldson have been absolutely solid.
Yeah, you did. Yep, no, you did. Definitely.
Both of them had been fantastic in defence last night. And it's that one lapse in concentration that has cost us a goal. And I made comparisons to, it was that one lapse in concentration by Goldson in the Europa League final a couple of years ago that cost us. And I know how much he gives to us at times, but you cannot afford that at this level. If we want to do well and progress and get to finals and win finals, we cannot afford to have these concentration lapses. I just think going forward, Dave, he is not the answer, because it's the same type of defensive lapses he has all the time. I'm at pains to say it because he does so much good, but it really annoys me when you do criticise him for this kind of thing. People jump on his defence straight away. Oh, but he's done this many games. He's been solid for... Yeah, I know that. But when you have concentration lapses, you're allowed to say, yeah, he was at fault for that. You're allowed to say that at this level, when you're dealing with the last 16 of a European competition, you cannot be like that. You have to be focused 100%. And you said it, talking about the last game, Clermont has got it drilled into them and they can't afford to have these lapses at all. I know it's maybe asking a lot of the players, but that's their job.
Yeah, Derek, he's going to be one of the first names on the team sheet regardless. And I hear what you're saying, the Europa League finals. I still have nightmares about it. Absolutely heartbreaking. And, you know, a game, even though I was in my, you know, in my late 40s, a game that I just will never get over. And it was because of that lapse of concentration by goals. And it wasn't just that culminated in us not winning. There was a lot in that game, but it did happen in the game. But regardless, Derek, he will be one of the first names on the team sheet because overall he is very consistent for us in the league. But as you say, there has been huge matches where lapses in concentration by him have cost us goals. But that is not going to stop him being one of the first names in the team sheet, and it's one of these things. It's always been the same with defenders, and I saw you had a wee confab with a Rangers fan earlier on who was putting in comparisons to Terry Butcher and even the likes of Richard Goff, and you can go back, you know, Lorenzo Amoruso had lapses in concentration, and, you know, it would cost us goals. Unfortunately, it does happen, but because of the huge matches that this seems to have happened with Goldson, it seems to be highlighted more, but I don't see it affecting his future at the club, and he will still be in the team next season and playing every game. So it's just unfortunate that it's panned out like that, that it's been him that this has happened to.
Yeah. Anyway, 69th minute, a big chance for Benfica after carving us open. It was a cutback on the deck from the right and Di Maria shanks it wide. 76th minute, probably 10 minutes too late after this. Dessers, Lawrence and Sterling off, Roof, Jack and Cole McKinnon on. Now, Cole McKinnon, youngster, getting his... I think he's had a couple of games before for the first team, but this is his European debut as well. So, it's shown fairly well there.
Yeah.
And
yep.
I've just seen a stat as well, because obviously Celtic fans and what they're like. Somebody's just put, Cole McKinnon was 14 months old when Celtic last won a European knockout tie. Coslind hadn't even celebrated his first birthday.
Oh, very good, very good.
Yes. So it's the first mistake I think Clermont's done in this case. I know he's trying to manage injuries in game time, but the players were completely leggy. And if he had done it maybe 10 minutes earlier, that wee lapse in concentration maybe doesn't happen because they've got a wee bit more support from fresher players. So a bit of a mistake that from Clermont. 82nd minute, corner from Benfica on the right. The player was going for goal and Butland puts it over the bar for another corner. 84th minute, Diomande off, Raskin on. And 90th minute, Silva off and McCausland on. And that's how the game wrapped up. So, Dave, under the cosh for a lot of the game, bar the two issues, I mean, penalty aside, that should never have been a penalty. And nope. The defensive mistake there, I thought it was a fantastic performance from the team and an outstanding result. Obviously, makes the whole game and the result meaningless because it's a one-shot, winner-takes-all in the next game next week.
I said before the game kicked off, we were major underdogs in this game. They have never been defeated in that stadium in the European competition, I think. So it was going to be a tall order. With the amount of injuries that we had, Derek, it was going to make it even harder for us. And the only thing that I hoped from this game was that it was going to be close enough so that we could at least have a chance at Ibrox. So I thought to myself, if we get beat, here's hoping that it's just by the one goal so that we've got something to play for at Ibrox. But my God, we've given ourselves a great chance, Derek. We really have. And going on everything that I saw from Benfica, great build-up play. They tore us to shreds at times. Butland had a couple of sensational saves. He also had a lot of saves that we'd expect him to make. I just feel that, you know, for the performance of the team last night, they have given themselves a huge boost of confidence going there, scoring the two goals, coming out with a draw. We would have snapped off your hand if you know, if someone had offered us that game before that, especially when we saw the lineup he was putting out, or he was forced to put out, having no wide players at all to play. And for the guys like Silva, who you could tell was desperate to do well against Benfica, just going by family connections with Porto and stuff like that with his dad, you could tell he was well up for it. He had a great game. Dio Mandy was excellent in midfield. Like I said, I thought Sterling was tremendous all game. Butland, outstanding. And as you said, Derek, apart from that one lapse in concentration, I thought Goldson had a great game. I really did. I thought he dealt with absolutely everything that came into the box. So did James Tavernier. He was a lot quieter because he was concentrating more on his defensive side as well. But as for the whole team, it was a fantastic performance and a tremendous result for us. And, you know, taking it back to Ibrox with the home crowd being there, we'll all be well up for it. I think it's going to be a cracker. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is we've got nothing to fear against them. We go out there, play our normal game that we know we can do, making sure we don't have the same defensive issues in terms of the wee niggly mistakes, and we've got nothing to fear at all.
I was listening to the radio commentary after the match, and Pedro Mendes was one of the guests for BBC Scotland, and he was excellent, and he said that Benfica's huge chance was to put Rangers away in the first leg at home, because in his words, Derek, they don't travel, or they certainly haven't this season. And he was supremely confident now with the, you know, the crowd at Ibrox, that the Rangers, you know, if they pull out a performance like that last night at home, we'll have enough to put them away. So I really hope that Pedro is 100% spot on there. He obviously watches the team more than I do. But no, we've given ourselves a great chance, Derek. And as you say, we'll still be slightly underdogs, I think. But I prefer that. I prefer us being that. And here's hoping that the crowd really, really gets behind the team and scares the living daylights out of Benfica when they come out onto that field. That's what I'm hoping. And obviously, we get a few players back from injury as well, Derek, which will help us majorly.
Yes. So, just rounding up this year, on the league table, we've played 29, won 23, drawn 1, lost 5, scored 64, conceded 16, goal difference plus 48, and we're on 70 points. 2 ahead of Celtic, and in a day we should have dropped points, we've actually went a wee bit further ahead of Celtic.
Yeah, I know.
Two goal difference ahead of them,
yep.
And we are 15 points ahead of Hearts. Now, one of the things about, obviously, the Celtic issue, and I think we've seen it over the last wee while now, the pressure is getting to Rodgers. We have him rattled. He's making claims that this will be a sweeter title than the invincible ones that he done as well, because he knows that he's under the cosh now. He's making silly comments, then refusing to expand on it when asked about it, being belligerent and borderline sexist, calling out referees when it was actually nothing to do with the referee, it was the VAR guy that gave it, showing video comparisons of his team compared with Ange's team and how similar he's doing. The pressure has clearly got to him. We have got Celtic rattled and on the back foot now. We keep doing what we are doing, we will win this title.
Derek, we've just got to, and Philip Clement is playing this perfectly. He's not getting drawn into anything. He's not getting drawn into talk like what Rodgers is about winning the title. He's got us firmly concentrating on the next game. That's the way it should be. It's difficult for us as fans to just look at it like that. It really is, and we can't help ourselves but look further ahead, and that's what I'm absolutely loving about the guy. He really is installing this grit and determination with the team and only concentrating on the next game. And apart from that blip against Motherwell, Derek, it's been absolutely sensational what the man has done for the club so far, with, up until a few games ago, a team that he's inherited. It's quite incredible what he's done and the turnaround in the club, and here's hoping that it's just going to keep getting better and better.
Yes. So the games to come, we've obviously got Sunday the 10th of March is away against Hibs in the Scottish Cup quarter-final. That's a 17:30 kick-off. Obviously, then the return leg for the Benfica game, Thursday the 14th of March at home. That's a pain in the arse kickoff time. Yep. That's a 17:45. Sunday the 17th of March away against Dundee in the Premiership. That's a midday kickoff. Saturday the 30th of March at home against Hibs in the Premiership, a 1500 kickoff. Sunday the 7th of April at home against Celtic in the Premiership. That's a midday kickoff. Then Sunday the 14th of April away against Ross County again in the Premiership. That's another midday kickoff. So all to play for as usual.
5 wins out of 5, Derek.
Hopefully. You said it the last time, so never considering the 6 games there. Let's make it 6 out of 6.
That's 6 out of 6, aye, definitely.
What game are we losing then, Dave? You just jinxed it.
Oh, no, I got my calculations wrong there, Derek. That's what it was.
So we'll now go into the news. So as ever, a few bits and pieces to cover. First one, an Aberdeen fan was cleared in court for holding an offensive and sectarian banner at Ibrox in October 2022. He was charged with a breach of the peace with a sectarian element and he pled not guilty. The banner said, "Kill all Huns." The judge said that the banner itself constitutes a breach due to what was written on it. The question was whether or not he knew what was written on the banner as he took hold of the sides of it. The judge went on to say that he was not in possession of the banner. He was not responsible for folding it up. And given the CCTV footage, he did not appear to know those who was responsible for folding it up. So there was a reasonable doubt for him being not guilty. So basically, he got away with it. If you're in any football stadium and you've got an offensive banner, don't be the one that folds it up. Plead not guilty and don't talk to the people who were also folding it up as well, and you will get away with it. I can almost see the point in there, because if they've only seen him holding up the banner and they've not charged anyone else who was also holding up the banner and he hasn't been the one folding it away, then I can understand the reasonable doubt point of view. My issue with it is then, is that before it even gets to a judge, the procurator fiscal have got to have an idea of a success of prosecution before they will even take it that far. So what the fuck were they doing in that respect there with that? Once again, somebody who was being sectarian against Rangers gets away with it.
Yep, 100%, yep.
Next thing here, another court case here, is a story about the Easdales winning a defamation case against a YouTuber for calling them effectively a bad name, and then he breached his court order not to do it again. I'm not going to get into it, Dave, really, because it's on the media, because it's quite clear, it shows what kind of people they are as well, and the scumbaggery we had at our club at one point in time. So I'm just glad it's all done and dusted with them. I cannot believe we had people like them in our club, and a lot of people have got a lot to answer for that period of our history.
Yeah, definitely.
Another court case here. Imran Ahmed was suing Scottish prosecutors for £60 million in the alleged malicious prosecution case. He was awarded compensation of only just shy of £500,000. This was down to the fact that he lied about his career and misled the court. He had opportunities to correct this in evidence, which he never done. He effectively lied under oath, and his reputation had already been damaged prior to the prosecution, the judge said. The judge did take on board the evidence that was accurate, which is why he was awarded anything in the first place. But Dave, sorry, he's lied under oath. Surely that should make any evidence, no matter how sound, it should make it inadmissible. But anyway, the whole malicious prosecution case has cost the taxpayer around £52 million so far.
Unbelievable, yep.
Mm-hmm. An utter shambles.
Yep.
And you've got to remember, we still haven't got any accountability for ultimately what happened at Ibrox during that time.
100, yep, totally. We're still in the dark. We still don't know what happened. And for everything that's happened, for that amount of money to have been spent, taxpayers' money on that, for us still to be in the dark is quite incredible. It is, and it leaves us thinking, are we ever going to actually get any real answers to what actually happened, you know, from start to finish in the whole debacle? It's looking as if that's not going to happen, and it's really, really disheartening.
I mean, it's quite clear a fraud has taken place within the club. It was quite clear that something untoward has gone on with the individuals. What I want to know is, why was it allowed to go as far as it did in the court cases? and it seems to be bungled in the first place. I mean, you've got one of them that we managed to get off a plane in a South American country and extradite him from there before he had to go through passport control, and we brought him back to the country for this, for his trial. You know, it beggars belief. I mean, given the fact that there's that amount of money that's went out the public purse in compensation payments, etc., in relation to it, you would like to think that there's going to be some sort of public inquiry, so the whole thing will get dragged up again at some point. Maybe we will get to find out what happened at some point, Dave.
I won't hold my breath, Derek.
Next thing here, a bit of a thorny subject, but the Subway Loyal has been noticed by Clement. He understands the issues with travelling, the traffic, supporters buses, but he hopes that people can stay longer. He's always been about synergy between the fans and the players because he's always believed it helps. So if the managers noticed it, it's clear that the players will have too. The only other comparison that can be made in Scotland is with them over the other side, the green side of Glasgow. We've actually arguably got better transport links than they do, but they don't have the same issues with fans leaving. So with our fans, I get the traffic issues. I get having commitments. I mean, ultimately, it's the reason I no longer have a season ticket. But you're only going for 18 league games. You're lucky if we get 4 or 5 home cup games. Again, we're quite lucky if we get 6 or 7 European home games as well. It's not a lot of games each year to stay for the full 90 minutes. It's maybe something that dialogue needs to happen with the club to see what can happen. I know that there's been supporters buses talking about trying to get preferential treatment where they park. Rangers maybe need to put pressure on the government and the rail authorities to open up the Ibrox railway station, which we've mentioned before as well. So I get the issues with the traffic and all that, but if the manager's seen it and he's asking the fans, surely you should just stay. Dave, I used to stay till 90 minutes, only left once in the couple of years I had the season ticket, and that's because I was already out on a night out and we were losing and I was pissed off and I wanted to go for more pints. So,
Derek, I'm going to play devil's advocate here just slightly, because I remember when it was a hell of a lot worse than it is now, and that's when we were winning week in, week out, and I'm going back to, you know, the 90s into the early 2000s when I had my season ticket at Ibrox for all those years. And I used to notice it every single week where it was, you know, it basically looked as if half the stadium were leaving at about 80 minutes, or certainly between 80 and 85 minutes. It was quite incredible. I don't think it's anywhere near that now. It's obviously still happening, and as you say, the managers obviously noticed it. But going the way that it used to be, it's not anywhere near as bad as it was. Certainly the games that I've been to in the last, you know, few seasons, I think it's a hell of a lot better than it was. So I'm not going to get too hung up on what the manager's saying there, because I realise that he's, you know, he's just here and he didn't know what it was like before. I think there's a hell of a lot more fans are staying right to the end. So I'll not be too critical of them at this stage. But I do agree with him 100%. I think we should all be staying right to the end of the match, especially when it's a tight game. But, you know, we saw that when we were playing the likes of Aberdeen, when it was, you know, we were getting beat and we brought it back to 2-1. It looked as if the fans were there right to the end of that game to cheer the team off. So I don't think it's as bad as it's been made out.
Next thing here, Clement has also hinted at the board wanted to prioritise domestic competitions over Europe, and he's told them that he goes into every game to win it, regardless of what competition. I mean, he didn't criticise the board in any way, and I do get the two schools of thought with this one here. We're Rangers, we want to win everything we're in, ultimately. We want to do well in Europe. But when you look at it another way, the league this year guarantees us Champions League football, and it's been extended and expanded next year as well, and there's a lot more money involved next year for qualification. So I can get the two trains of thought.
I don't think that we're at the stage, Derek, where we can prioritise anything just now. I don't think we've got the squad to do so. I agree that the league is our main priority, but everything else after that, he's putting out his strongest team. But I don't think that we've got the squad that we can't put out our strongest team. So we are going for it in all fronts. But I do love that about Clement. He is, and we said it before, each game, he's taking one game at a time, regardless of the competition. And I really, really like that. But I think we would be silly not to say that the league isn't our priority. But if we were to say, and I've heard a few fans saying, you know, I'm no bothered about the Europa League, or I'm no bothered about the Scottish Cup, well, what happens if, you know, we suddenly get a few bad results and we're away back in the league and we've been knocked out of the Europa League because we've not been supposedly taking it as seriously, or the Scottish Cup, and we end up with it that we don't win anything. So I don't think that we are anywhere near that stage, especially with the squad that we've got to be able to do that. So
next thing here, Hibs had their AGM, and that was obviously on the back of them getting an announcement of a major American backer who was going to pump a few million pounds into them. They've threatened to cut the Old Firm allocations due to sectarian singing and pyrotechnics. A day later, after they announced that, the Edinburgh Derby happened, and yeah, Shankland had a bottle opener thrown at him by fans. A bottle opener, Dave.
Yep. A bottle opener, a pie. It wasn't just the one thing. That there was missiles raining down on him, Derek, from the Hibs fans. Absolutely shocking scenes. A bunch of supporters who seem to get away with it constantly. I mean, we can rhyme off over the years the amount of incidents involving their fans. Shocking scenes. That was absolutely disgusting. And I thought Lauren Shankland dealt with the whole situation fantastically, I've got to say. A lot of people are saying it's hilarious and all that. I think it was absolutely shocking. And again, we'll wait and see what happens with the authorities, but it seems that we really, really don't want to see. And there's like a common element here, isn't there?
I mean, I think I underplayed that there. I did see a bottle opener. What I meant to say is a bottle opener, corkscrew, knife combined in one, yep, because that's what was, uh-huh, it was one of the type of bottle openers. Yep. What my main point is, I'm trying to highlight here, is the fact that, see, if you want to cut our allocations because you can sell it to your own fans, go ahead. Nobody has any issues with that. We done that ultimately as well. It's your right, as it should be. But don't give us this sanctimonious pish that you're going to cut our allocations because of behaviour of fans. Yeah, Hibs fans have been some of the worst in the country over recent years. Pitch invasions, attacking players en masse, attacking players as they go down to take a throw, after throwing multiple dangerous objects, throwing glass bottle at the head of a player lying down injured. I mean, I got into it with a Hibs podcast on Twitter when I pointed out the Shankland incident to him, and he just claimed I was using whataboutery. I even pointed out to him the fact that I did admit every club has got their set of fans that are idiots, including our own. But no, it was just whataboutery to them. Not absolute bollocks.
Even although you were able to give him a list of actual incidents that had happened, that's whataboutery. It's, you know, quite incredible. It really is. But shocking scenes. They'll come out, they'll try and identify them, ban them for life. But as I say, it seems to keep happening, doesn't it?
Next thing here is Jermaine Defoe has been on, I think it was a podcast or something he was on, and he's said that he was forced into taking the coaching role by Gerrard. It's something he didn't want to do. Gerrard ended up leaving. Gio asked him what he wanted to do because he was looking sharp in training. He said that he wanted to play, and then he took the decision to go back to Sunderland. So I'm not sure what Gerrard's thinking with him was, because it was clear we were needing a striker towards the end of Gerrard's reign. And it's really not clear if Gio tried to keep him, as the timelines are a wee bit weird, because Gerrard left in November, Gio was appointed mid-November, and by mid-January, Defoe was gone. So I find the timeline a bit weird there, but it was especially considering it was Gerrard that brought him in.
And I find it strange as well that Defoe's on his podcast desperate to get into coaching and get a head coach role, and if it was Gerrard that gave him that start, then surely that would have been something that he would have jumped at the chance to be able to do that. So aye, that's a bit of a strange one, that one.
I mean, again, I just keep thinking to having no striker in Seville, it would have been the perfect player.
Yeah, 100%. Yep,
the last thing I've got in the football news here is, talking of Gio, he's hit out at Beale for being in the director's box for the Aberdeen game before he was sacked. He stated that he would never have done that himself, and he's hinted at the unprofessionalism of it. You know, he's also went on to say that the board could have done better by him, as we didn't strengthen. I mean, on the Beale thing, I think I may have rubbished it at the time, but looking back on it, completely shady thing to do. And as much as Beale said at the time the trip had been planned for weeks, it was clear things were not going right. So surely you just must, you know, kind of hold off on that one there. In terms of the backing Gio got, it's clear that he didn't get any.
No,
you know,
no.
Beale got it all, and between him and Ross Wilson, they've left us ultimately with a shit show. Gio was one kick away from having a statue at the end of the day. And as much as it was clear that he had lost the dressing room and the players weren't playing for him, had he got the backing, had he got the money, the league the following season may have worked out, because then he would have got his own players in to instill something new and fresh in the team as well. But still, these things sometimes happen for a reason, and it's left us with Clement, who is clearly an absolute manager in every sense.
Yep, you've got to say that 100%. I think it was quite clear that he didn't get back to the way that he should have, Derek, and the whole thing with Beale, looking back on it now, it was very unprofessional, something that shouldn't have happened. But exactly like you said, I'm not being bitter about the whole thing, because we've now got the man that we all, you know, are sure is going to lead us on to great things. So if none of that had happened, we wouldn't be in the position we're in now. So we've got to take the rough with the smooth sometimes.
Yes. So, woman is selling a jar of her own farts for £230.
I've seen this online.
Astonishingly, the jars have already sold out on the influencer's online store.
I saw this and I couldn't believe it.
Singaporean influencer Cheng Wing Yi, also known as Kiara Kitty, with more than 230,000 followers on Instagram, has opted for a pretty gross habit to bring in the cash. Earlier this month, she hit the headlines for staging a hoax egg attack on herself in an attempt to gain more followers.
An egg attack, and now she's putting an egg attack on other folk. Yes. Like, she's selling them.
Cheng was doing a live stream as she toured a place in Taiwan on the 9th of February when she got her assistant to dress up as a middle-aged woman and pelt her with eggs. The woman was also accused of seducing her husband and warned her to stay away from him. The influencer later admitted that it was all an act after being forced to make a public apology following a police investigation into the incident. She was subsequently banned for entering Taiwan again. Her latest scheme, however, is even more unsavoury. Kiara Kitty is now flogging her own farts online, claiming they can be retained for up to 30 days after the jar is opened. The jars cost a whopping £237 each and have astonishingly already sold out. Her ad on her online shop reads, "Are you curious how favourite streamer Kiara Kitty smells like? Don't just imagine it, feed your curiosity."
God.
But she warns potential buyers, it may take some time to craft a scent jug, so processing time may change without prior notice.
Oh my God. Right, Derek, you got one brewed up, because I can see how a way that we can pay your podcast and bills for next season.
90 Day Fiancé star and adult content creator Stephanie Matto once claimed to make up to £38,000 per week from selling her farts. Speaking to Rolling Stone, she says, "People really like the idea of spending an exorbitant amount of money, but I think it's a financial domination thing for a lot of men." The self-described fartrepreneur landed herself in ER after severe gas pain from a fart-inducing diet, result of heart attack-like symptoms.
Fartrepreneur.
Every day's a school day, Dave.
It certainly is. See, Derek, I come from Grangemouth, right? So I've been living with a refinery on my doorstep for like the first 30 years of my life. So I've been used to smelling things like that constantly. So wouldn't it make any difference to me?
I've no comment, Dave.
No, definitely not.
So on that smelly note, we will end the podcast.
Savoury note, yes.
Yes. So, Dave, it's been apart from one result, it's been a great run of fixtures. Yeah. Long may it continue.
Definitely. Like we said, I just hope that wee blip against Motherwell is a wake-up call to the players not to be complacent. I'm sure the manager will have that installed in them. And we're looking forward to the next few games, and hopefully we're going to get positive results from them. So just stay positive and, as I say, looking forward to the games.
Yes. So all that's left to say is thanks for listening and goodbye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
And the stadium erupts in red, white and blue. You've never seen anything like it.
Let's go.
Manchester, release yourself.